Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. We have a great podcast for you today. We have Miss Annie McElwain joining us from our Jackson, Mississippi office. Annie's a principal in our firm and does so many things so very well, including helping us keep up with the latest with ESG. We're fortunate enough to get to do a podcast a little over a year ago on the topic. And like everything, things are changing and evolving. And Annie's going to help get us up to date. Good morning, Annie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. And, you know, we got a little spring weather cooking around and we have to kind of let that work around us, but life goes on and you've been out, seeing a lot of different folks and conferences and keeping your ear to the ground on ESG. So let's, maybe pick it up where we left off last time. We talked about the basics. Maybe it'd be good to just do a little refresher for everybody that's listening in.
Sure. Yeah. Last time we really were very high level with it, kind of just getting into the introduction, but just to, you know, refresh everyone's memory, ESG is environmental, social, governance, and these are three separate tenets of it. There's, you know, some other synonyms for ESG you may hear are going to be things like sustainability, CSR, public relations, social investment, environmental compliance even. But ultimately, at the center of ESG is going to be the management of a company's risk and preservation of shareholder value. And, you know, like I said, it's made up of environmental, social, and governance. So environmental is going to be your protection of natural resources, how your company is being a steward of the environment. Social is going to be how your organization treats its people and also the community it operates in. And then governance is going to be how your corporation polices itself. So are there internal systems of controls and practices? Are there checks and balances? And more than 90% of your big S&P 500 companies publish these ESG reports in some form. They're becoming much more prevalent. It's, again, viewed through the lens of business opportunity and risk, as, but especially in America, is really viewed as a comparison to peers, to other corporations. So that's kind of the high points. You know, when we look at the environmental side, a lot of times what companies will focus on will be climate change. That's really the big one, the carbon emissions piece. But also there's things like resource management, water management, environmental impacts like air quality. Are they reducing it? Are they implementing new control technologies? Social, there's a lot of focus on really your workforce, inclusion and diversity, but also things like community relations, economic impacts, human rights. And then corporate governance is looking at, you know, the makeup of your board. Is it diverse? Is it full of the, you know, gamut of skills and qualifications you'd want throughout your company? And then also looking at things like management incentives. Are there metrics and goals? Are there expectations for management and shareholder rights? So that's kind of the high points of what it is.
You know, and we were talking earlier, and we so many times we think about regulations and policies. We think about, of course, in where we live, in our state, in our region, in our nation. Mm-hmm. But really, it's a worldwide endeavor.
It is. And it really does matter. Something that's interesting is just how much the younger generations expect it and, you know, take pride in companies that put importance on their environmental impact, their social impact, and how they govern themselves. You know, ESG initiatives are considered now important to about 41% of our current workforce. But when you narrow it down even more into your younger generations like Gen Z and millennials, millennials, for example, say it's important to over half of the millennial workforce, 55%. And you know, 86% of workers who actually work for organizations with these ESG related goals have expressed great pride in them. So, you know, when you're working for a company that values these things, your employees really do notice it. Morale does increase. And one thing that I really found interesting was some research that was done, you know, asked different generations, would you be willing to take a pay cut, relocate, accept a job with fewer benefits, accept a job with less work-life balance if you agreed with their ESG policies? And overwhelmingly, Gen Zers and millennials said that they would do all these things. Actually, a lot of these were more than half of them said that they would take a pay cut or relocate or do all of these things, like accept less of a work-life balance if they felt like they were working for a company that had a cause that they believed in. And I thought that was just incredibly interesting.
That is, and that really gets into how our workforce is certainly evolving as, you know, Xers are starting to get into retirement age, and then our workforce will be comprised of, you know, millennials and Zs. Mm-hmm. And each generation, like generations we come from, where each one's a little bit different, unique, and has their different, you know, value points. But certainly, you know, people want to make sure they're working for a good company and the company is doing good things, mm-hmm. good corporate citizen, and, you know, it aligns with that. So it certainly makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Was there anything, as you kind of looked at this study, and I don't want to oversimplify things, but did it pretty much line up the older a worker was compared to someone coming into the workforce? You just saw kind of a marketed change of where their values were in regards to how a company does its ESG.
Big time. Yeah, the younger generations definitely were much more interested in ESG, valued it much more. And it could be a variety of reasons. It could be, like you said, because our boomers are retiring and they're like, well, okay, I'm about out. So, you know, y'all figure out what you want to do. But it is interesting that millennials and Gen Z are taking it into account much more. I think these generations want to feel like they're giving back in their everyday career and feel like they're making some type of impact. And, you know, the impact actually that most people are interested in is environmental. It was valued by about half of the respondents as the most important part of it. And, you know, it could be a variety of reasons. I think environmental is so easy to see. Is our water bad? Are we polluting the environment? And so it's right in front of your face. And I think workers can especially measure that in their minds.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I want to draw you to this area, Annie. Mm-hmm. So when you think about it, you know, the environmental piece, well, we have environmental regulations. Well, not mm-hmm. every nation in the world has mm-hmm. environmental regulations like we have or as evolved as what we have. But when you think about the whole ESG, all the sides, there are different pieces that kind of make it up, but there's no, and let's see if I can say this correctly, that there's not necessarily a entity that says, hey, we're going to enforce ESG altogether. It's bits and pieces. So can you kind of break that out for us and help us understand, you know, what are the rules and who enforces them?
Yes, you're exactly right. You know, here in America, we have very clear environmental regulations for companies. But when it comes to ESG, there's not necessarily a framework. No one here in America really governs it. It's not required to be reported. It is understood to be required by employees of large companies that they want to see it reported. But America currently doesn't enforce reporting of it or really require anything of environmental, you know, pollution reductions or social practices or policies or governance rules for companies. And really the criteria and rating systems here in America are made up by the companies, a lot of times understanding what their employees and shareholders want to see. But again, it's not mandatory on public filings. Most of the time, you're going to find it on company websites, seeing, you know, what they're doing for sustainability for their employees. So there really is, like I said, lack of concrete reporting metrics. Whereas in places like Europe, the European Union has implemented a lot of directives to promote it and to promote corporate responsibility. There's a framework actually for reporting ESG with these large corporations in the EU. And they definitely have tried to formalize it a lot. Canada also has more of a framework in reporting it, but it really, their focus has been a lot on documenting carbon emissions and more of the environmental side. They don't necessarily have the requirements for social and governance reporting that the EU has. So I do expect possibly America to adopt more of a reporting framework like Europe and Canada have, but I do think it'll be a while because obviously America is driven by what corporations know their people want. So I think it'll be a little bit of time on that.
That makes sense, is that it continues to evolve. So as we've evolved, we've discussed it on this podcast, thinking about, Annie, what would be some of the things that you would point out, maybe the latest and greatest things you might consider or some different things as companies consider their ESG approach? What are some real, you know, value adds or drivers for that? Could you maybe give us some context there?
Sure. I think a lot of people think ESG is just a box to check, but it really is going to bring value to companies. There's lots of reasons for why. If you've got a robust ESG program, it can help obviously boost employee morale. I mean, that's a big thing, but also help with different cost reductions, obviously help with reduced regulatory and legal interventions. If you have, like I said, a robust checks and balances, if you're actively reducing environmental impacts, then you're not going to be a target necessarily for as much regulatory intervention. Also, just frankly, if you're investing in things like your people and the environment, it is diversifying what you're investing in, which actually helps to optimize your investments and assets. So there are very, you know, there's several good reasons to try to develop an ESG program for your company. But the big consideration I would say is don't just try to check the box. It really, really, really needs to fit with your company's current strategy, current culture. It needs to make sense. It needs to be actual, you know, an honest approach to what your company needs and what makes sense for you. Because if you're seen as overdoing it, it can really, really take away from your leadership's time and focus. But then also underdoing it is even worse. There's been multiple companies actually in the past few years who had weak ESG propositions, and they saw double-digit declines in market capitalization after their missteps came to light. So the key is just make it make sense, be realistic, you know, kind of implement it steps at a time, and don't just do just what another company is doing just because they're doing it.
I think that's really good counsel there too, is you think about your company and each company is unique and different. The cultures are unique and different. Mm-hmm. It's not one size fits all, and you don't have to chase everything on the menu. You think through, you know, hey, what, because you're doing things, really, I think the key is you are documenting what you're doing and you're trying to give a guideline to where maybe other areas that may not be quite as strong or robust, we can catch up here and we can be more mindful of it. And it really all comes together when you do it that way, instead of, like you said, just one size fits all, trying to join in. What, as we kind of wrap things up, Annie, are there any maybe misconceptions? I think I'm kind of heading down that line of discussion in regards to ESG.
You know, misconceptions and some downfalls that could happen. Or like I was saying, if you're just focusing too much on your ratings, if you're just checking a box, that's going to not only zap the focus of your leadership, but it's also going to make your employees jaded. They're going to think it's all just a bunch of lip service and not actual actions that their company cares about. Also, a big misstep, misconception is that, I mean, leadership has to be completely bought into this. It needs to be a top-down approach. It needs to be your biggest champions or the head of your company. And then, like I said, too, it needs to align with your strategy. It needs to be consistent throughout the company, not just one office or not just corporate doing it. You know, at every office, every employee understands what your motivation is, what your goals are, what ESG policies you really want to focus the most on, and it needs to be consistent throughout the company. And then also not monitoring and not having any kind of KPIs to follow to see if you're meeting it. I know I said don't focus too much on ratings, don't focus too much on numbers, but you do need numbers. It doesn't need to be a subjective measurement that your company follows. You know, you need to say, we're going to reduce our carbon emissions by this amount by this year. We're going to implement a program where we reimburse employees for gym memberships. We did different things like that, that can be very, very concrete in seeing if you achieved your goals.
You know, Annie, this may be an oversimplification, but I think about our firm, and I think about how our budgets evolved over the last 30 years, and it's our 30th anniversary, which is a great milestone. But, you know, in our first probably 10 years, we say, hey, we know our business. We don't need a budget. You know, we're not going to – we're going to work things out. And then, you know, we began to mature. We're like, yeah, we ought to have a budget. And they were, you know, kind of hopes and efforts. And as the next decade goes on, we get better and better at it. And then over the last 10 years, we've gotten really good at budgeting. We can really dig in and come in really close to thinking through what our expenses are, what our opportunities for revenue are, et cetera. And that speaks to the team. But, you know, on a really simple idea, that's sort of how I think ESG can evolve too. You know, you start at a point and you begin to record, and you're doing a lot of things now, but you document that. But as you see that, you go, hey, here are areas that we could really, you know, bring more value and be more mindful and do a better job here. So I think that's a great approach too, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the ESG framework, I think a lot of times we assume it's for these large Fortune 500 companies, but it is something that small companies can implement. I mean, look at the things you're already doing, categorize them. Okay, is this more in the E, or is this more in the S, or is this more in the G? And how can we start to track it? How can we improve it? What are some KPIs we can put on it, you know, while you're doing things like your budgeting process? And like you said, Todd, practice makes perfect. It may not make much sense the first year you do it, but as you do it more, you realize you're able to track it better. And then suddenly 10 years down the road, you can look and see how much you've improved in expectations and in tracking that.
No doubt. Well, Annie, as always, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for your time. We, if you would, you know, to our audience out there, if you'd like to discuss this more, learn a bit more information, feel free to reach out to myself or Annie. Annie, of course, our subject matter expert. But there's two, well, I guess the easiest way to do it would be go to our website, ppmco.com, www.ppmco.com. And under About Us, you'll see our leadership team, and you can reach out to Annie or myself that way. That's probably the fastest way to do it. Annie, anything in closing you want to share?
I don't think so. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're always an awesome guest, and I think you got to host a podcast. There's been outcry to get you to host another podcast soon, so we're going to get you back in the host chair. A better job than I do. So, no, Annie, thanks again for your time, and our audience, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies. Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com to stay updated on new episodes feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.